The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
The World Bank on Tuesday slashed its global growth forecast by nearly a third for 2022, warning that Russia's invasion of Ukraine has compounded the damage from the COVID-19 pandemic, raising the risk of global stagflation. In its Global Economic Prospects report, the World Bank said the war in Ukraine has magnified the slowdown in the global economy, which could soon be facing the painful combination of feeble growth and rising prices known as stagflation, last seen in the 1970s.
And when you have growth rate at the global level around 1.5%, that means you are in a very serious, severe downturn.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Get to know that word stagflation. We're going to hear a lot of it going forward. John Harper for Drew Mariani, who's back tomorrow here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. Imagine getting out the crock pot. Maybe you're making something in the crock pot tonight, the slow cooker for dinner. And in the crock pot, we're putting in slow growth. We're putting in rising prices that you and I are paying for everything. We're putting in high unemployment. That's the toxic brew that could hamper the recovery from the coronavirus pandemic. And as you just heard in that report, the World Bank yesterday warned that all of those together are called stagflation that could induce years worth of struggles. How do you and I survive this? How do we keep money in that 401k? How do we afford that $5 a gallon gas, which they forecast could go as high as $6 a gallon by the end of the summer, certainly by the end of the year? Chris Temple is going to put that in perspective for you. He's the editor and publisher of The National Investor. You can find that at nationalinvestor.com. Can I borrow 20, Chris? Is it still worth 20 bucks?
You know, John, great to be with you. I saw somebody put a little joke on my Twitter feed this afternoon that $30 is a new $10. You know, you start out with $30, you pay taxes, you have inflation, and now you're back to minimum wage at 30 bucks.
You know, it's funny. I was in the supermarket yesterday, and I got half a gallon of milk. I think I got a loaf of bread and a couple of other things that were on sale, only the essentials. And I looked up, and it was $21.18. And I thought, wow, what a bargain. But that shows you how we have just been so we've just gotten complacent, I think, about what's going on with these numbers. But, you know, the gas prices alone are one thing. But if you thought, well, I have a cheap dinner tonight for chicken, that's up 14% in the last month.
You know, most everything is up. And as I've tried to remind people recently, the you know, there's an old saying, the buck stops here. Well, the buck stops first and foremost with the people who are the custodians of it for just over a century now, and that's the Federal Reserve. Had the Federal Reserve not printed 30% of all the dollars that ever came into existence in just the last couple of years, this would not be so bad. I mean, they can blame price gouging, real and imaginary. They can blame Vladimir Putin and all different kind of things. But first and foremost is the late Milton Friedman said, inflation is always and everywhere a monetary phenomenon.
Right.
And when you've got so much money that's been printed, that's where this all starts. And it's why the Fed is belatedly trying to put this toothpaste back in a tube. Good luck with that.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, we saw what was needed to stimulate the economy during the Trump administration when we had COVID. And, you know, that gave us a shot in the arm. And then the Biden administration trying to get us another shot in the arm. And it just shows that it's really on both sides of the aisle, because if you just have the printing press going downstairs, as you say, you're going to flood everything. Imagine the car is flooded. You can't start it and you're putting more gas in the tank. It's not going to work.
That's about right. That's a good analogy.
Yeah, it's just crazy. Chris Temple is giving us some perspective on stagflation and inflation and everything else that's happening to us. I wasn't paying attention in economics class. I'm going to ask you some real basic questions here, Chris. When we were coming out of the coronavirus pandemic, some of the forecasts were, well, everything's going to be great. We're going to see the unemployment drop, and it did. It's at its lowest point in, I think, forever. We're down below 4%. We're at 3.6%. But it's going to be the land of milk and honey. Everything's going to be great. We'll be, you know, rolling in money. And that just didn't happen.
Not exactly. You know, as I've been trying to explain to people on this front too, John, you've got to throw away the old playbooks. The stagflation today is considerably different than what we had in the late 70s and early 80s. In some respects, it is going to get considerably worse. than what we had back then, but not necessarily with unemployment going up to double digits again, at least not anytime soon,
right,
unless the economy really blows a gasket. There's a lot of different moving parts to this.
What would make the economy blow a gasket?
Well, you've got to look at two things, because these days, especially with the Federal Reserve for over 40 years now having securitized everything, economic growth starts with credit creation, okay? And it's been getting worse and worse. We have these increasing boom and bust cycles that are driven by credit. So you've got to look at two different things, the organic economy, which has got enough liquidity in it, frankly, to plod along for quite a while. We could technically slip into a recession officially as early as a month from now when the second quarter GDP numbers come out. And if they're negative, that's two quarters in a row. That's allegedly a textbook recession.
Okay.
But there will still be a lot of strength in the economy because there's a lot of liquidity out there. The lower to middle income people in America are already starting to get dinged a little bit. But there's still a lot of spending. There's still a lot of liquidity. The other thing that people aren't paying enough attention to and handicapping whether we're going to have any trouble or not are the markets. The Federal Reserve has so juiced the markets that they are now embarking on what I've characterized as a game of monetary Jenga. You know, that game where you pull out one stick at a time and you hope you can keep the whole tower from imploding.
Right.
That's what the Fed is doing now and very belatedly trying to raise interest rates, take some of this gross excess liquidity out and hope that they don't pull out one too many sticks. So that's where the issue is going to arise. It's not going to be so much that, you know, interest rates get to such a level that it kills the housing market. Rising mortgage
right.
rates, which have more than doubled from their bottom, have slowed things down, but not a lot yet. Material costs have come down, so that's helping. But the rise in interest rates, the Fed reducing its balance sheet, is very likely to break something on Wall Street before it breaks something in the economy. So that's what you've got to be watching for.
You know, Chris, I'm here in the New York metropolitan area, and the housing market is just through the roof. There are bidding wars on just about everything. I was reading a piece, for those of you who are listening, on Relevant Radio 1150 in Boston this afternoon. It was in the Boston Globe. Talk about a bidding war. Obviously, the real estate market is hot up there as well. A house listed at 820 closes for $1.2 million. Who's got this money? And can you introduce me to them?
You and me both, buddy.
Yeah.
Well, look, I live in St. Augustine, Florida, the oldest continually occupied city in North America, beautiful place. Real estate has gone up 50%, the choicest real estate, 50% plus in the last two and a half years here. I just saw a report yesterday. I lived in Montana years ago in the northwest part of the state. Whether it's there or a specific report I saw yesterday, Bozeman, Montana, near Yellowstone Park, stuff has gone up 50% there the last 2 years. So, again, the Fed created mountains, oceans of liquidity, and there's a lot of people still have a lot of money, and that's how they're buying real estate. So that's one of the reasons why you can't really expect, all else being equal, of course, to have the same kind of a housing bust that we did 15 or so years ago, when so much of it was driven by reckless use of mortgages and derivatives right. on top of those and that kind of thing. This is just lots of liquidity, lots of investment money. It's not going to be the same everywhere. There are going to be areas where the economy isn't doing well, where you don't have high demand, like in New York or, you know, the boutique areas of Montana or here on the coasts of Florida. You know, other markets probably will start to weaken somewhat. But again, as the Fed incrementally tries to bring everything off the boil, there's a lot of challenges for them. Again, they're not going to necessarily kill the economy right away, but the risk that I'm looking for is what's going to happen to the markets. Can the markets, after becoming so addicted to this uber monetary cocaine, are they going to be able to be weaned off of it? And that's going to be tough.
And if the market makes a correction, and it could make a correction depending on who you listen to, by as much as 8 to 10% this fall, we've been on that roller coaster before. That could be good news for some, even though all of our 401ks will go down, Chris Temple, but it's also the buying opportunity for the next time it goes up, because it always does.
There will be some of that. Look, I love to use the example, John, when we have, and I don't think there's going to be anything necessarily abrupt here. I think we've started a cyclical bear market. We may only be about halfway through. From top to bottom, the NASDAQ may end up dropping 50 or 60%. The S&P 500 may drop about half of that. But if you go back to the 2000 to 2002 time frame, about halfway through that bear market, and a light bulb started to go off over the heads of some investors saying, wait a minute, let's not just sell everything. Let's not panic and throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Right.
What is out there that makes sense? And that's what I'm trying to help people do right now. What are the companies, what are the themes out there that make sense? A big one that I've been harping on recently is what I call the new fangs, mostly commodity themes. You know, the fangs of the last several years, which were all asset classes unto themselves practically, at Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, and Google. Now your fangs are fuels, aerospace and defense. The second A is agriculture. The N is nuclear energy, which is going to be the leader of all the renewable zero carbon emission fuels. And then the G is for gold and other metals and commodities. Some of them have done well, some of them haven't. But especially if we go through another big downturn in the market and the Fed and other central banks need to levitate things again, commodities will ultimately be the huge winners in that environment. That's not to really to be in some of those.
We're talking about your money today on the Drew Mariani Show with Chris Temple, the editor and publisher of the National Investor online at nationalinvestor.com, talking about stagflation. And it's a word that you will hear coming in the next few months, and it'll be a part of our vocabulary here in the United States. And we're talking about why it matters and what you should know. And of course, we're here to help you at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. You talk about these fangs, and you mentioned nuclear energy. As we talk about, you know, green energy, and we see the current administration's move to electric cars and just kind of getting us off of fossil fuels, nuclear energy is also quite controversial. You really think that's going to spike here in the United States?
Absolutely. In fact, that's kind of old news in a way, John. There's few things in the world right now, with virtually all the developed nations, with the one exception still being Germany somewhat, but everybody else is rolling out new and enhanced nuclear energy programs. The developing world, China, India, others, this is the best source and the safest source going forward of 24/7 electricity. You know, in this country, and here's why this is a very compelling investment theme right now, in this country, roughly 20% of all of our power grid is fueled by nuclear energy. You know how much, and we have over 1 billion pounds of uranium in the U.S. of A. available in resources. You know how much of that is mined today to meet the needs that are, I think, about 60 million pounds a year to fire those reactors? We mine none of it. We import it from Russia, from Kazakhstan, from Canada, and elsewhere. And just this week, the Biden administration, which has been less bad for nuclear energy than for most everything else to do with energy, green or otherwise, they now are finally pulling the trigger, something that the Trump administration set the table for, and that is a domestic uranium reserve. They want us to get off of Russia and Russia-focused uranium sources. They want to start producing it here again. So this is why I think nuclear energy is one of the big themes. You know, with modern technology, small modular reactors, it's a completely different world than the world that gave us Chernobyl and Three Mile Island,
right,
and even Fukushima 10 or 11 years ago. You've got state-of-the-art technology, much lower cost for this, and this is the single best form of carbon-free and emission-free energy.
Right.
Going forward, not that it's the only one, but it's the best, and it will be part of the all of the above energy mix that we have going forward. And from an investment standpoint, and I've been saying this for about the last year and a half or so, going back to the latter days of the Trump administration when they were getting on this, there is not, from an investment standpoint, a single more bullish setup fundamentally for any single commodity than there is for uranium.
Speaking to that point, Chris Temple, about nuclear energy, can the existing plants, if now that we're finally tapping into our own uranium, can the existing plants handle the demand? Because, you know, when we talk about building a nuclear plant, not in my backyard.
Well, what's interesting is that in places like California and Illinois, not exactly red states, and in Washington, with a lot of bipartisan support and the support of the Biden administration, there has actually been a move, which startled me in the last couple of years, to not have some of the old nuclear power plants in this country shut down. They're going to keep them open. They're extending licenses. And best of all, one of these is one of the Bill Gates funded things that's taken over an old coal power plant in Wyoming, going to build a nuclear power plant there with the Gates funded small modular reactor technology. The only one of those that has received direct funding from the Department of Energy is a company just spun out on its own and gone public recently called NuScale. They've got some of the best technology in the world. So you're going to see going forward, yes, we're going to keep these legacy nuclear power plants, the old ones, so to speak, open as long as possible. But now you're going to have some other ones built. I mean, think about it. You've got small, you know, miniaturized nuclear power plants to power submarines.
Yeah, that's right.
Why can't you have that in small towns? Why can't you have that in a big manufacturing facility and take it completely off any coal or gas-fired power grid? This is the future to a great extent. So it's an exciting time from an investment standpoint. I mean, we've cleaned up on uranium-related stocks now for a couple of years, but the move has hardly started.
Trying to keep you ahead of stagflation and a potential recession here in the United States, the common sense advice from Chris Temple from the National Investor online at nationalinvestor.com. And we're here at 888-914-9149 to help you out. Judy in Wisconsin Dells, Wisconsin, welcome to the Drew Mariani Show. You're on with Chris Temple.
I was just wondering if now was a good time to invest in, like, those Bitcoins or CyberCash.
Boy, I'm the last one you want to ask about that, because I have never embraced the modern-day cryptocurrencies for virtually all of my adult life. I have been an advocate of anything that is honest, interest-free, and usable by the average common person that would take the money power away from the Federal Reserve and the banking system it controls. Tragically, in my opinion, all of these cryptocurrencies these days have become investment speculations. They are not functional as money for the average person. I underline average person. You know, I was telling the same story to someone earlier today. Just earlier today, I had to send some money to a relative. I used Venmo. And seamlessly, in about a half a minute, and with no cost, it took money from my checking account through Venmo and deposited in her checking account. Now, why would I not do that and instead use, let's just use one example, a Bitcoin or an Ethereum, whatever, where you don't even know what the value of that Bitcoin is going to be from 1 minute to the next? And this is where these cryptocurrencies, with all their promises, have failed. Again, they've become investment speculations through the greater fool theory. And, you know, I haven't dabbled in them at all. I've not advocated it. I wish I had a DeLorean with a flux capacitor attachment so I can go back and buy a bunch of it, you know, and sell it a couple of months ago at a time. But I didn't. But look, my attitude is this, and there's people who are going to disagree, and I understand that. I would love to see one or more of these cryptocurrencies actually functional as money. If that point comes, I'll be leading the cheers. But at this point, there are so many compelling companies and investment themes out there with real people, real assets, real technology, real property, real money that could be huge. They could be tomorrow's Apple or Microsoft or whatever. Why would you play this game of this greater fool theory? And I'll tell you what, and a lot of people found out again recently the hard way, and maybe it's not the end of the story, but when these cryptocurrencies decide to sell off, there's not a whole lot of chairs to grab when the music stops before you lose half or two-thirds of your money.
Wow. Judy, great question. How much did you pay, Judy, in the last fill-up for gas?
I only put 50 in. That's all I could afford.
Yeah.
$50.
That's what kind of car do you drive?
Well, I drive a RAV4, but that only was like a quarter of a tank.
Wow. That's something. That goes to show you because, I mean, you know, a RAV4 is, you know, pretty fuel efficient as well, because that's like it's a four-cylinder car, at least, you know, in most of the trims. Judy, thanks for adding so much here on the Drew Mariani Show. 888-914-9149 with Chris Temple, getting you around stagflation, answering questions about cryptocurrency, and just trying to keep you ahead of the curve here as we go into recession and stagflation and all these different terms that you're going to hear as the global economy starts to slow down. Chris is the editor and publisher of the National Investor online at nationalinvestor.com. That's nationalinvestor.com. Going back to our conversation about energy, when you talked about those different things to look at, and that's fuels and aerospace and agriculture and nuclear energy, and you put gold down in that list of five. When we look at nuclear energy, how far is this actually going to get? Because the fossil fuel industry is the literal grease, the oil and grease of Washington, D.C. There's a lot of big money there in terms of the oil and gas lobbies. So,
Sure, John, there's big money there. And whether anybody on the political and environmental wacko left likes to admit it or not, we still are going to be dependent for the rest of our lifetimes
on fossil fuels,
on oil and gas. Absolutely,
yeah.
We are.
Yeah.
Now, is there a path forward to reduce dependence on those, hopefully become more sustainable, and increase the amount of energy that we get from sustainable sources and from carbon-free sources and hydrogen and all different kinds of things?
Yeah.
Of course there is. But the problem that we have now that has led to what I've called a new energy crisis, which is going to get far worse in the months and years ahead, I hate to tell you, and I always upset Drew when I bring that news. But look, we've got an administration that acts as if all of these electric cars they want us to drive, they just magically come from the ether. You know, Elon Musk and these other companies, they've got a magic extrusion machine that just spits these things out.
It's like the TV commercials you see. On Christmas, you wake up and you look outside and there's a new car with a bow in the driveway. That's how it works. Isn't that how it works, Chris?
That is hardly how it works.
Oh, man, you just ruined it for me.
You know, I'll tell you, the reason we have a new energy crisis is that we have an administration, and on my website, when people go there, one of the latest commentaries I put is Janet Yellen's background in all of this. She is one of the real dark players in our new energy crisis. She is as duplicitous and disingenuous as anybody in the Biden administration. She just did that again in front of Congress this week.
Right, changed her tune.
Yep. She has got the job as Treasury Secretary, John, first and foremost, not for anything to do about money and finance, but because of her climate change bona fides. That's why she's there. That's why she has led the charge to penalize Wall Street and other firms when they finance fossil fuel companies. It's all out there. Now, they don't want to tell you this now that it's become such a political negative for Biden and his administration with these high gas prices. But if they want to know why gas prices are so high, why we have problems getting products to people, we're going to have diesel rationed potentially. We're going to face blackouts and rolling brownouts in America this summer. And I haven't gotten to the part yet about what happens with hurricane season this year.
If that goes into the Gulf of Mexico and one of those refineries shuts down, look out.
You know, and these people, they grossly, for political and some of them idealistic but ignorant reasons, thought that they needed to start shutting down the fossil fuel industry when they don't even have half of an idea how we put together its replacement.
Yeah.
This same administration has killed in this country, when resource nationalism is a very dire security theme, forget an investment one, security theme for our country. Why does this administration, when they claim they want electric vehicles and all of these things, why are they killing projects in this country that would supply the battery metals to support that?
Exactly.
They've done it in Minnesota. Yeah. They've done it in Alaska. They've done it in Arizona and elsewhere.
And we also see natural gas in Western Pennsylvania and West Virginia, parts of New York State. It could be the Saudi Arabia here in the United States if you just, you know, tapped into that, if we got beyond everything else. I know it's frustrating. We're out of time, Chris, but I wish we could spend some more time talking to you because it's so educational and it's also frustrating at the same time, but you have given us some solutions as well, and that's what we appreciate. Chris Temple, the editor and publisher of the National Investor online at nationalinvestor.com. Chris, thanks. Take care.
My pleasure. You too, John.
I'm just kind of curious, with all of the inflation that's going on, I'm making changes when I go to the grocery store. What about you? What kind of cuts have you made in your budget? What are some of the changes that you've made in your life with your family because prices are going up? Let us know. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Let's get through inflation together here on the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
You know, we receive over 1 million prayer requests every year, thanks in part to the Catholic Order of Foresters Studio Line, helping us stay connected to your intentions. Learn how our sponsor could support your family with life insurance at relevantradio.com/Forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
John Harper for Drew this afternoon. He'll be back from vacation, spending some time with his family out east tomorrow. Just talked to Drew as he was driving across Pennsylvania, probably now someplace in Indiana, coming back here to our Relevant Radio headquarters. And I'm sure he'll give you an accounting of how much it costs to just drive from the east, from the Philadelphia area, back to Chicago. You can imagine, you know what it's like. We just talked to a listener who has a RAV4. It's $50, and that's not even a complete fill-up. So in this time of inflation, I'm just kind of curious, what kind of cuts have you made in your budget? What are some of the things that you and the family have given up because prices are going up? So, you know, inflation has hit all of us. What have you kind of thrown overboard because of inflation? Stuff that you may have enjoyed before, might have been going out to a meal once a week. It might have been buying a more expensive piece of meat for you and your family, or you're not doing that anymore. Perhaps having more leftovers than you ever did before, or even just the cost of getting to work with rising gas prices. 13 states, District of Columbia, the average price now over $5 a gallon. It's up a nickel from yesterday. The national average is $4.91. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. So what changes have you had to make because of inflation? What are some of the things that you did for you, your family, that you're not going to do anymore? And what about vacation this year? You're going to take one? You're going to do one of those staycations? They say that one of the reasons why gas prices remain so high is that the demand is high. It's the pent up demand for just getting out of the house from being locked up because of COVID for the last couple of years. So it's like grin and bear it. You know, we'll pay $5 or $6 a gallon for gasoline and the rising cost of accommodations only because, hey, we weren't able to go anyplace for the last couple of years. What kind of reservations have you made because of inflation that's affecting all of us? 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I was in the supermarket yesterday. I was saying a gallon of milk, had a loaf of bread. What else did I get? I got just a couple of things, you know, just complete essentials. And it was $21. And I almost said to the person who checked me out, saying, hey, I got a lot of stuff for $21. It all fit in one bag. And that was it. And I was like, wow, that's incredible. Now, I know I'm going to sound old here when I say this, but I remember, I guess it was probably in the late 60s, early 70s. My mom picked me up from elementary school and we would always go shopping on a Thursday afternoon, and we went to the same supermarket every week, Palmer's Supermarket. And I remember, I think this was just before Thanksgiving, and everybody was coming over to our house. And for the first time in my life, I saw the total over $20. Thought that was all the money in the world. And now, $20 yesterday, gallon of milk, loaf of bread, couple of other essentials. That was it. I thought it was a bargain. You've probably experienced it too. 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. What have you had to throw overboard? Because stuff is just costing so much. What kind of cuts have you had to make with you and your family? 888-914-9149. getting a pound of chopped meat, just ground chuck, regular ground chuck. It was $6.99 a pound. And I did a double take when I looked at it at $6.99 a pound, thinking, well, are they going to come and cook it for me at that price? It was $6.99 a pound. And it was for, you know, the 80% stuff. It wasn't for the fancy, you know, 93.7 with the low fat. No, it was just regular ground chuck. It was $6.99 a pound. So in going around the supermarket now, when I do shopping, and I'm on a fixed income now because I wasn't expecting not to have work, but here I am. It's the reality. It's how the Holy Spirit just kind of picked me up and just said, okay, here you are. God's got a plan. I don't know what it is yet, but he's got a plan. So nonetheless, you know, we deal with all of the gifts that the Holy Spirit has given us, and we do our very, very best. And so now when I go around and do shopping, I look at stuff that I probably would have bought a year ago that I don't buy now. So you learn how to do without because of inflation that's going on right now. Is at the gas station today, did not fill up the car, and I've got a hybrid. And so I get, you know, decent gas mileage, but $25 of gas at $5 a gallon. I remember when I first got the car a couple of years ago, that would fill up the tank. Not anymore. It was 5 gallons of gas. That was about it. Now, it's going to last me for a while because I don't go anyplace. And so now I'm also thinking for the first time in my life, do I really need a car? Right? And maybe you've had these same thoughts when you look around and you just say, okay, what can I live with? What can I live without? And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. You know, I'm that person who just, you know, I go to church and I go to the store. Now I've got, luckily where I live, I can walk to two different parishes for mass in the morning. I'm saying, okay, well, that's an option. My parish is 4 miles from my house, but I live on a bus line. It's like, well, wait a minute, I can take the bus. And because of the gas crisis, they've eliminated the gas tax here. And they've also made the buses free through the end of the year. So I'm thinking to myself, well, wait a minute, why am I writing out this check to the car company for, you know, to the bank for the loan on the car? I really don't need this thing, especially now that used cars are, you know, apparently hot commodities. So, you know, those are something that if you asked me a year ago, would you consider getting rid of your car? So no, absolutely. I just need that to get around. But now you're just saying, okay, here are some of the reservations that I'm making because of inflation that's going on. And, you know, do I get angry at the administration? Do I get angry at what's going on? Yeah. And is it righteous anger? Yeah, as you are probably as well. But I also know it's the common sense that they just can't turn a switch and turn it off. Yeah, they made some mistakes. And there are some mistakes that have been made, as you just heard in our conversation with Chris Temple, with the Fed just flooding the market with so much money. Some of that was to get the economy propped back up on its feet. And maybe you got one of those stimulus checks during COVID-19. That really helped a lot of families. But as we continue to keep the printing press going, this is the situation that we're in. So now we're talking about stagflation, even though the job market is as healthy as it's ever been in at least the last 50 years with unemployment well below 4%. What did I see? Was at 3.4, 3.6%. It's amazing. We're almost at that position now where they say it's complete employment, even though the unemployment rate is at 3.6%. And we've also seen that same thing of so many jobs, not enough people to go around. So many jobs, not enough money to pay. And even with the increase in the minimum wage and what other companies have done to entice people to come to go to work, now inflation is outpacing whatever they've given us, thus the stagflation, thus the inflation that we have right now. So it's this double-edged sword. You and I have lived through it before. We did it in the 1970s. We did it from 2001 to 2002. We had a miniature version of that from 2008 to 2009 and a condensed version of that when we saw the bottom fall out of the market and the unemployment spike at the beginning of COVID. But we came back by flooding the market with money. So here we are. And now we have to make those reservations. 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149, about the reservations that you now have to make and what you've thrown overboard because of inflation. It's really there. And so, you know, here it is. Joe is in Elk Grove, California, joining us this afternoon here on the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. Joe, welcome to the conversation. How are you?
Good. I had a basic question.
What is that, Joe?
Hello?
Yep. What's the question?
Can you give me a kindergarten answer to what inflation and deflation is?
Deflation is when the prices of goods and services decrease across the entire economy. We could use some of that deflation right now. And what that's going to do is it's going to increase the purchasing power. So basically, our dollar is going to be worth a little bit more because our dollar can buy more. Now, with inflation, because the prices are going up, but wages are staying the same, the value of that dollar and what we can buy for the same amount of money is going to be less. So inflation, we wind up buying less with the dollar. Deflation, we wind up buying more for the dollar. Does that help?
Thank you.
There you go, Joe. Thank you for listening. In Sacramento to Relevant Radio 1620. Yeah, it's this crazy inflation and deflation and stagflation that we have right now. So buckle up, but we'll try to give you as many different solutions as possible here with voices like Chris Temple. And, of course, you can find him online at nationalinvestor.com. That's nationalinvestor.com. Still to come, we've got the Cale Clark Show and then Trending with Timmery. And then, of course, the Family Rosary Across America with Father Rocky tonight. And if you have yet to download the Relevant Radio app, please do so, because every night for the Family Rosary Across America at 7 p.m. Central Time, you can also do this at 12 noon. Every day, 7 days a week, when we stream the Mass here at Relevant Radio, you can actually watch a video feed and stream it to your smart TV in high definition. And you can join Father tonight with the family around the television, watching him or listening to him on the Relevant Radio app and, of course, on every smart speaker and at relevantradio.com and your local Relevant Radio station. As we were mentioning today, and of course our conversation with Monsignor Weiss from St. Rose of Lima Parish in Newtown, Connecticut, who went through the Sandy Hook massacre just 10 years ago and now reaching out to his counterpart at Sacred Heart Church in Uvalde, Texas, and sharing some of those experiences as that priest down in Uvalde, Texas, goes through the process of a number of funerals, not only for children, but for members of the community. Today, we had the House Oversight Committee hearing some very dramatic testimony from survivors and the loved ones of victims and others affected by gun violence. If you missed that this morning, and it was only in a condensed amount of time, and the people didn't speak very long, but it was quite powerful, we'll share some of those highlights for you coming up next here on The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
The Drew Mariani Show.
Hi, Drew. Thank you. Thank you for your show.
This is The Drew Mariani Show.
Marvelous show on the radio right now.
On Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
I want to break free. I want to break free.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
John Harper for Drew Mariani, who's back from vacation tomorrow here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. I'm going to share some audio that happened earlier today. If you missed the House Oversight Committee, some dramatic testimony from the survivors, the loved ones of victims and others affected by gun violence, not only in Uvalde, Texas, but of course at that Topps grocery store in Buffalo, New York, just a few weeks ago. And it's a very compelling testimony that you will hear. And some of it is a bit graphic. It certainly is very emotional as we share that with you. And of course, the discussion is continuing with a bipartisan committee in Congress and also in the Senate about some kind of gun reform. In whatever form that will be, there's a group of lawmakers who continue to try to get that legislation passed. And some of the things that they're talking about and agreeing on are background checks, are giving states some incentives to enact red flag laws, and expanding mental health. Senator Patrick Leahy is a Democrat from Vermont on the Senate floor this morning. Here's what he had to say.
Well, we have a problem. We have a problem in the United States where the leading cause of childhood death in 2020 was firearms. Think of that. Our children and our grandchildren from the leading cause of death, firearms. We have a problem when we cannot stand up and together to respond to the fears of our children. We have a problem when we cannot push aside the interests of the NRA and the gun industry or the Gun Owners of America or other pressure groups that tell us that Democrats are coming for your guns. Of course, some of the gun industry will say that because it boosts their sales. It boosts their sales and children die. I'm a Democrat. I'm a gun owner. I've been both nearly my entire life. I've also been a prosecutor who prosecuted murder cases and went to death scenes at 3 o'clock in the morning, seeing the people had been shot. I'm also a parent and a grandparent. I'm a United States Senator. We are the adults who must protect our children. And if we do nothing, we are not protecting them.
It's passion and politics, and of course you've seen that, and probably in your own discussions as you've talked about what to do about gun violence here in the country, especially in light of Uvalde, and of course what we've seen unfold ever since Columbine back in 1999. And as I was mentioning this morning, the House Oversight Committee heard some dramatic testimony from the survivors, from family members of survivors, both from Uvalde and then the shooting that happened on May 14th at the Top supermarket in Buffalo, New York. I want to share some of that with you this morning, this afternoon. Rather, Kimberly Rubio testified today. Her daughter, Lexi, was a student at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas. Kimberly and her husband were at the school for an awards ceremony just a couple of hours before the shooting. And Kimberly said one of the last things that she told Lexi, her daughter, before leaving school was that they would get ice cream that night to celebrate the awards that she won at school.
To celebrate, we promised to get her ice cream that evening. I told her we loved her and we would pick her up after school. I can still see her walking with us toward the exit. In the reel that keeps scrolling across my memories, she turns her head and smiles back at us to acknowledge my promise. And then we left. I left my daughter at that school. And that decision will haunt me for the rest of my life. We don't want you to think of Lexi as just a number. She was intelligent, compassionate, and athletic. She was quiet, shy unless she had a point to make. But she knew she was right. She so often was. She stood her ground. She was firm, direct, voice unwavering. So today, we stand for Lexi, and as her voice, we demand action. You've all seen glimpses of who Lexi was, but I also want to tell you a little bit about who she would have been. If given the opportunity, Lexi would have made a positive change in this world. She wanted to attend St. Mary's University in San Antonio, Texas, on a softball scholarship. She wanted to major in math and go on to attend law school. That opportunity was taken from her. She was taken from us. Somewhere out there, there's a mom listening to our testimony, thinking, I can't even imagine their pain, not knowing that our reality will one day be hers, unless we act now.
That's Kimberly Rubio testifying this morning at the House Oversight Committee. Her daughter Lexi was killed at Robb Elementary in Uvalde, Texas, just a couple of weeks ago, as was the daughter of this parent.
Hello, today I come because that girl lost my baby girl. She is not the same little girl that I used to play with, hang around with, and do everything because she was daddy's little girl. I have 5 kids. And she's the middle child. I don't know what to do because I think I would have lost my baby girl. She's everything, not only for me, but her siblings and her mother. I thank y'all for letting me be here and speak out, but I wish something will change, not only for our kids, but every single kid in the world, because schools are not safe anymore. Something needs to really change. Thank you.
Now, Uvalde is a community of about 15,000 people. If you live in a small town, you know how intimate it is in a town of 15,000 people. Uvalde is about 60 miles west of San Antonio, Texas. And so everybody knows everybody. Dr. Ray Guerrero is the only pediatrician in Uvalde, Texas. He was at home and started getting texts from other doctors and anesthetists and specialists 60 miles away in San Antonio, Texas. And Dr. Roy explains what happened from lunchtime on the day of the shooting.
Then at 12:30, business as usual stopped, and with it, my heart. A colleague from a San Antonio Trauma Center texted me and said, "Why are pediatric surgeons and anesthesiologists on call for a mass shooting in Uvalde?" I raced to the hospital to find parents outside yelling children's names in desperation and sobbing as they begged for any news related to their child. Those mother's cries I will never get out of my head. As I entered the chaos of the ER, the first casualty I came across was Mia Cerrillo. She was sitting in the hallway. Her face was still clearly in shock, but her whole body was shaking from the adrenaline coursing through it. The white Lilo and Stitch shirt that she wore was covered in blood, and her shoulder was bleeding from a shrapnel injury. Sweet Mia, I've known her my whole life. As a baby, she survived major liver surgeries against all odds. When I saw Mia sitting there, I remembered having seen her parents outside. I wasn't ready for their next urgent and desperate question. Where's Elena? Elena is Mia's 8-year-old sister, who was also at Rob at the time of the shooting. I had heard from some of the nurses that there were 2 dead children who had been moved to the surgical area of the hospital. As I made my way there, I prayed that I wouldn't find her. I didn't find Elena. But what I did find was something no prayer will ever relieve. 2 children whose bodies had been pulverized by bullets fired at them, decapitated, whose flesh had been ripped apart, that the only clue at their identities was a blood-splattered cartoon clothes still clinging to them, clinging for life and finding none. I could only hope these 2 bodies were a tragic exception to the list of survivors. But as I waited there with my fellow Uvalde doctors, nurses, first responders, and hospital staff for other casualties we hoped to save, they never arrived. All that remained was the bodies of 17 more children and the 2 teachers who cared for them, who dedicated their careers to nurturing and respecting the awesome potential of every single one, just as we doctors do.
Again, very emotional testimony in a topic that obviously is emotionally charged. And you know that we've had the debate on guns and gun violence here in the country for years and years and years and years, and it continues again this morning. And of course, that very compelling testimony from the only pediatrician in Uvalde, Texas, and very graphic about what he saw in the emergency room. This was before the House Oversight Committee this morning in Washington, D.C. And it's very easy to just point fingers and point blame. That's a very easy thing to do. And we naturally do that after things like this. But the message would be one of listening and trying to have a conversation. Can we try to have a conversation? Last night, I don't know if you saw ABC World News tonight, but Matt Gutman did a story, went into a major firearm store in Texas and just talked to the people who own it and just say, you know, how do you feel about, you know, selling to somebody who's 18 years old? Should the age be raised to 21, among the things that are talking about with this bipartisan committee. And in engaging in a conversation rather than yelling, they found that with the people who worked within that gun store in Texas, there was great consensus about what we should do in terms of maybe a background check, maybe raising the age from 18 to 21 to buy certain weapons, perhaps the mental health issue. And when we start to talk about things and start to have conversations, we realize that we've got so much more in common than we do just tearing us apart by just doing the political divide of black and white, because it really isn't that way. Doing what Drew does and what we do here, being able to do talk radio, you have really the honor and the blessing to meet people that you wouldn't normally meet. And in doing secular talk radio, I had the opportunity to meet Colonel Oliver North once. This was during a political campaign. And we were just talking about stuff, and I just mentioned in passing, and yes, I've shot a gun, I've shot rifles in a controlled setting. And I said, you know, we should go shooting sometime that you're in town the next time. So the next time he comes, he remembered that. We did. And this was to a rod and gun club that is obviously sanctioned by the NRA. And when you see what the NRA is, which is a responsible organization within this particular rod and gun club, and I'm sure it's the case in so many others across the country, and you know if you're members, they are people like you and me who have their kids and are training their kids respect for firearms. And I asked a couple of other people at the club, and I said, you know, at home, do you have weapons? And they say, yeah, but, you know, they're locked up. The kids don't know where they are, but they're locked up, and we have them for our own protection, and we understand that. But it's the respect. It's the respect that they had for the firearm and the respect that their kids were learning about firearms and how to treat them safely, how to shoot safely, in this particular case, with a lot of people in this Rod and Gun Club, for hunting. As a matter of fact, there's a chapter there of Hunters for the Homeless, where they hunt deer, clean that deer, and then bring it to those who are in need. And so that's another side of this story that you and I don't get to see because it's always so emotionally charged. And there's someone in the 24/7 news cycle of just always, you know, pointing fingers and yelling, because that's great theater. That gets eyeballs on television. But the message that we bring as we listen to some of the testimony from the House Oversight Committee is to maybe do a little more due diligence, maybe to talk to somebody that you know who owns guns, to find out where they are and to find out where the common ground is and what you and I can do with them to come up with some solutions. And perhaps together with those solutions, we can bring them to our elected officials to show that there really is perhaps more unity in this country than the 24/7 news cycle would lead you to believe. So that's just a message of listening, a message of discernment, and a message of just taking a look at what's inside of someone's heart and connecting on that level. And isn't that who you and I should be as Catholics? Drew is back from vacation tomorrow, right after 2 Central. Cale Clark coming up next here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.